Comics for Beginners Podcast, Episode 26. Making Comics with Patrick Urich. Hello, and welcome to the Comics for Beginners podcast. I'm Palle Schmidt, writer-artist based in Copenhagen, Denmark, the artist on Thomas Alsop, the book, the monthly book that's out from Boom. Issue 7 of 8 is just out. I've actually finished my work on that book, finished all the art, and I put up a video, a very long video, at comicsforbeginners.com. You can find it there at the blog, so comicsforbeginners.com/blog. I've did a video on some of the things that I learned working on that book. Hopefully there's some value in that for you as well. A while back I was interviewed for the Making Comics podcast called Gutter Talk with Adam Greenfield and Patrick Urich. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. I'm sure there's some value in that as well. The Making Comics guys are really cool. They've gathered up this huge site with tons of free information, and I was very pleased to talk to those guys and also to be invited on a panel at this year's Comic-Con in San Diego, where both Adam and Patrick are based. It was great hanging out with them there. Patrick, as I said, he's based in San Diego, but right now he and his wife are in London for work for a year, and luckily they decided to pop over to Copenhagen for a week and hang out with me, which was great. So we had great long discussions on art, craft, careers, maybe some too long discussions on Batman movies, and Patrick Urich is a smart guy. He even tried to explain composition to me, something about Fibonacci numbers. I must admit, I spaced out completely and didn't understand a word he was saying. No fault of his, I'm sure. But we also managed to record a podcast interview while he was hanging out here at my studio. And hopefully you won't space out as we talk about all sorts of things about the art and craft of making comics. It's an honor and a privilege to welcome not only to the podcast but to the country.
Yeah.
Patrick Urich, artist, teacher, and CEO of MakingComics.com, the site that tries to gather up all the knowledge there is out there about how to make comics.
Yeah.
Could you quickly describe how you got involved in that?
Well, I was a teacher in an after-school program called the Graphic Novel Project for about 4 years, where we published, made comics, and did stuff. And even back then, I'd come up with some ideas for, like, building a textbook or building something that would teach other people at the school-age level how to make comics. And I always loved working with school-age children because they're if you can make something simple enough for a ninth grader to understand, like, it's scalable up. Like, my mom can then learn it, you know? Like that, and that's always been kind of my thinking. And then I founded Little Fish Comic Book Studio, which was a comic book studio in San Diego that taught kids and adults how to make comic books. So we kind of went out of the school environment and opened a studio. And then I left there and was given MakingComics.com by Jason Brubaker because he liked the work that I was doing with Little Fish and with the Graphic Novel Project and my educational stuff.
Right.
And he gave the site to me, and then we started on this big... I gathered like six people, and we started on this big venture to form a non-profit that was... It is about gathering all of the information. It's a lot more like Wikipedia, And we're trying to model it after a nonprofit like Wikipedia.
So who would you say is the target audience for makingcomics.com?
Worldwide, aspiring comic creators and professionals, as well as people who don't know that they want to make comics. So, like, one of our big markets we're trying to get into eventually will be, and I'm targeted in it because I am a teacher, I'm a grade school teacher, is getting this curriculum both to work for professionals but also to work in classrooms, so that in, say, developing countries, we can get materials or the website or the tools that we're creating in there, so the kids can be like, wow, I've never read a comic and now I'd like to make a comic, and we want to see that happen. So I think it's everybody that enjoys making comics.
Right.
That's for our whole demographic.
Yeah, that's like everybody. So is you said you've taught school kids how to make comics and comics courses and stuff. Is there something, is there a common denominator with people who are struggling in the beginning? Is there a certain thing they get stuck on?
Well, everybody thinks they can't draw. I think that that's pretty much the beginning. Everybody thinks they can tell a story, which is wrong. And everybody thinks they can draw. Wait, they can't draw, which is usually they can draw better than they can tell a story in most cases. I usually find the kids who don't think that they can draw at all the most fun to work with. The kids who think that they can draw are the most annoying to work with. And I think what's interesting about younger kids is that they tend to have that belief that they can't draw. And that's actually better. When I've worked with adults, when we did Little Fish, it tended to attract people who wanted to make comic books. And because it attracted people who wanted to make comic books, even if they had no talent or experience with it, they had really solid ideas about what that were kind of hard to break down. Because when you're teaching, like, fundamentals, you're kind of like, you got to create comics this way. And they're like, no, but I want it to look that way. And I'm like, don't argue with the person you're paying to, like, help you, you know, like, to make the comic. But when I worked with, like, average ninth grade kids, it was the art students that were annoying, but it was everybody else who was just really excited to make comics, and they were just excited to gain those skill levels that they never knew they had.
Yeah, is it also because they see themselves, I mean, the learning curve is different. They learn to do something so fast that it makes them believe they can do more, whereas if you have a certain level of talent, and it might, the curve might be steeper, it takes longer, you're at this plane we were just talking about once, where you when you're feeling like you're never getting any better,
right,
where it just feels like you're stuck in the same level of talent or whatever you call it, like craft, forever. And whereas if you're just starting out and all you can draw is stick figures and now you can put clothes on them or whatever, then it seems like, wow, what a big jump from where I was before.
Well, like for the after school group, what was always interesting was they were there was about 20 kids that worked in there off and on. I mean, it was between 15 and 20 kids that I had in the after school, and they'd come in Tuesdays and Thursdays. But I picked the kids from, I had all of the ninth graders, so there's 150 kids that I had to pick from, and every year I got to meet all the ninth graders. Now, if you've worked with ninth graders, you know that none of their identities are solidly formed. So, like, I wasn't picking them to be in the group because they were good artists or because they were interesting comics. A lot of the time, I was like, "You're reliable," or "You're like you're a person that can follow through on this." Because we had a dream of going displaying at Comic-Con. That was the goal for the group.
Right.
Like, we will publish a comic book and sell it at Comic-Con, which we did 2 years after we formed. Right. That actually happened. But again, I think what was so inspirational for these kids is they didn't see it as, I want to be a comic book artist when I grow up. They saw it as, Mr. Eric sees something in me that I don't really know or see in myself, but I trust him because he's older and can see that stuff. And then they learned a lot about them. Out of all of the kids that were in that program, only one has gone on to create comic books as a profession. Yeah. The rest of them saw it more as a communication tool. They saw it as something where they were like, because they had letterers and layout people and people doing digital coloring, and they saw the team effort as something like inspiring to them, and not as much the goal of like, I want to be a master at what I'm doing, which is why I left to form Little Fish, because I wanted to know what that felt like. Like when I worked with people who wanted to master the form.
Right.
But when I worked with them, I kind of lost out on the team effort thing.
Right. Right. There's more ego involved when you, if it's your career that you're pursuing.
Right.
Right.
And so these kids were actually, I think they got better quicker because they didn't have any goals.
Right.
They were willing to take direction.
Right.
You know, they were willing to say, like, when I said, you know, do it this way, they were like, okay.
Yeah.
They weren't like, it doesn't look like Mike Mignola, you know?
So do you think that most, you've taught students in the U.S., obviously, do you think most of them are wanting to get into the U.S. comics industry, work for DC or Marvel, or is that changing, do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, completely. Most of the kids don't even read DC or Marvel. Those comics are way too expensive for them. They're all reading free online anime and manga. Manga is, like, huge. I mean, most of the generation of kids that are coming up now grew up on, you know, Pokemon and all of the... They were just influenced by manga and anime, like, at a much earlier age.
Mm-hmm.
On whatever level. They're also very big into video games. So what I saw is the kids who naturally were like, I like comics. Because I wasn't usually... those weren't always the kids I picked to work with.
Right.
But most, if they read comics or they were reading comics, it was anime and manga. And I think because of that, it segues... Anime and manga segues more naturally into the webcomic scene than anything else. Because, again, you're looking at volumes of comic books online for free, which is what is accessible to younger generations.
Right.
Because they don't have money. They don't have jobs.
Right. And it's also... on the top of my head, that I'm thinking that it's also more accessible for the artists, because there aren't these gatekeepers telling you, no, we don't want to publish your work.
Right.
You can just publish it yourself, and now you can become huge just online, right?
Yeah, I think the detriments of that, from what I've seen, is that because they're not interested in mainstream publishing, like, at all, because they see it as inaccessible to them. It's not because they see it as a bad thing. They're just I could never work for Marvel, because... Who works for Marvel? They don't know anybody. Like, it's they're just like, they instantly turn that thing off.
Right.
And because of that, a lot of the younger generation that I think would go into comic books as a profession tend to think of it as a hobby, because they don't see it as something you can actually make money doing.
Huh, that's interesting.
Like, I think they just like it for the novelty of it.
Right.
As opposed to, like, and this is why when you go to see crowds at Comic-Con, they're all in cosplay. Like, if you walked up to all of them and asked them, you'd probably get, like, what, 5% that actually dreamed of being in the comic book industry out of the
100. Or even read comics.
Yeah, because they like it for the novelty. They're like Big Bang Theory fans, you know. Like, they're just like, it's cool to like comics or something.
Oh, well, at least there's a difference between here and there.
Yeah.
That it can be cool to like comics.
No, that's
slowly coming
in
the corner of the world that I'm in, but that's just certainly a difference that I saw the first time coming to the States, was that so many people were gathered around this thing, and it was cool.
Right.
It wasn't like, oh, what a geek. Are you 12? So,
well, and that's why I felt it was important when I did GMP to like get them to Comic-Con. I made it like my mission to lead them there, because we actually were the first high school like student group to ever have a booth and sell comic books at Comic-Con. Comic-Con's an educational nonprofit, but they never even allowed kids to sell comics on the floor because there used to be an 18 and over kind of policy on booth vendors. And I was the one who pushed to change that, because I was like, you're an education nonprofit, I'm trying to do great things with kids, like, let's, you know. So we changed that.
Mm-hmm.
And when those kids graduated and went on to college, you know, I made a photocopy of our acceptance letter to Comic-Con, and I wrote on it, you know, the biggest lesson that you had to learn was that you can accomplish something that nobody thinks that you could accomplish. And you've already done that once in your life, so you can do it as many times as you want to from now on.
Yeah, or that was the one shot you had.
Right. Right. Or, yeah. Which I think some of them feel that way. I mean, but, you know, I can't control that. I mean, no, at least I gave them a glimpse.
But when you said you picked out students, not from whether they were good at drawing or storytelling, or so what would you say are some of the other talents you need to make it, I'm in quotation marks, in the comics field or be successful as a creator? What other skills do you need to have apart from being able to draw?
Social media was a big one. I think actually having like a strong publicity like ability is so needed in the independent comic scene. Like if you don't have that talent to network and push your book out to people and sell it, that was the biggest thing we were lacking in the group.
Right.
Because teaching teenagers how to sell things and be confident, like, you know, like be confident, force this book in their face and say, this is the most amazing thing ever. Like, that was the hardest thing for them. And so that's a big thing. Money management, being able to balance a budget and take risks on promotional items, like saying, like, do we really need a button machine, or is that going to break our bank and mean that we can't go to this convention next month if we don't sell? How many buttons do we need to sell? You know, like those math things are like really important. Cover design artists aren't the same as, you know, to be able to do graphic design. That's a different skill than being able to draw a hand.
Right.
And so like we had pencilers and inkers. Also writing, we had one kid, our lead writer for one of the last comics we did, his name was Luke. Did 17 drafts of one of the scripts because I just kept forcing him to get revision and revision and revision.
Right. That's another myth that you're supposed to be able to write a story in one sitting, more or less.
Yeah, Well, we couldn't even do that because we had a group of 15 and everybody's working on one piece together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like we had to like all agree that it was good to be able to, you know, have motivation to work on it for 6 months to publish it, you know, as a group. So colorists, you know, different flavors for different things. Like you need people who are experts at different things, especially when you have a goal of like 30 page comic worked on by 15 people in 6 months during only working for it for 2 hours a week.
So what was some of the questions that the students asked you in the very beginning? This podcast is for comics for beginners, so my target audience is people who are starting out or aspiring. And what are some of the questions they ask you when they're just beginning their path towards making comics? What are some of the, you said they struggle with the confidence whether they're good enough as artists, but
I think the biggest thing was the tool confidence. Like, I feel like there's a lot of tools in comics that are intimidating.
Right.
Like they think that if they don't know how to draw with a pencil, that's the reason why their comic doesn't look good. And often it's because they're not working with any ink. Like, comic book artists tend to, especially young, new comic book artists, want to do everything in pencil because they're like, and then I can erase it.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is, you know, working in ink, and then when they work in ink, they want to be so precise. They use technical pens as opposed to experimenting with brushes or experimenting with, you know, and I have to push them and say, like, no, you need to use your hand a little differently to use this. It doesn't work the same way as a pencil. Coaching them through that was really, really, really important because they feel safe with the technical pens, with microns and with pencils. They feel really safe in it. I find that art is 90% conquering fear of new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And like,
you're right.
You know, it's 10% knowledge. I mean, that knowledge piece and ability level, but the 90% is like just being like, oh, this might not work.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And even in making comics, we see hundreds of artists in our underdog community even will talk about how they felt so dumb because they're using microns for so long.
Right.
And couldn't understand why their line, when they would look at a finished comic, well, yeah, they got it done fast, but it looked really like a high school kid did it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they pick up a brush and ink.
There's no variation in the line work. Yeah.
And even when they weren't doing the line work good with a brush and ink, it looked better than it did with the micron.
Right.
Because it had that texture or whatever, you know. And
right.
So I think that, and on the digital side, the intimidation of like, Illustrator, lettering, letter if you letter in Illustrator, which you can or cannot, you know, feeling under equipped with, honestly, for people who are just beginning, like, Photoshop is the most intimidating, like, program in the entire world, because there's, like, 10 million buttons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you've never...
And you need to focus on the five that you actually need. Yeah, it's true. You can just overdo it and undo it forever and ever. Yeah, it's a huge
thing. Or, well, and what I always got, because I taught ninth graders how to use Photoshop for the first time. So any given day, semester, I'd have, like, 150 kids being like, broke. It doesn't work. It erased all of my stuff. And I'm like, were you saving? They were like, how do you do that?
Oh, whoops.
We forget that we went through that too, right? Like, when we were younger and we made a lot of stupid mistakes and lost files.
In the wrong layer. And,
I still do that.
That's why you do a backup layer in the underneath where you just click it off so you can't, so it's not visible.
Oh, I have this crazy filing system now. Like, I have 10 versions of every single file that I create for the different, like, flats.
Wow.
And I'll save that because if I accidentally color it or... I also find that Photoshop and Illustrator sometimes can corrupt a file, but if I have 10 of the same file at different stages, it won't corrupt all of them. Like, it only corrupts one. I'm like,
yeah, maybe I should have a backup plan like that. Oh, well. It's worked out.
I'm sure that yours is fine. I don't think that mine is, like, I'm just anal. It's just mine.
So, how would you say some of these technological advances that we're talking about now and the internet, how has that changed how people make comics today?
Well, I think, especially when we're talking about making comics, and what our new site launch is going to be this, like, repository of everything on the web that exists for instructional tools, but that's the biggest thing that's changed, is, like... Mm. Marvel used to try and surmise all of their comic creation experience down into the right way to make a Marvel comic. Oh, and for a long, we were talking about that a while ago, except now there's no one right way to create a comic book. And I think that that's become very apparent because there's no place on the web you can go and get the answer of how to make a comic book that is the same as somebody else's answer to that question. And I think that's really good. Like, that's not bad. Scott McCloud talked about it, about how, because he's working on a comic book right now, and he was talking about how when he was working on Understanding Comics back in the early 90s, you know, he had to hike over to the library and look through their, like, you know, their Rolodex of images to get references for certain scenes he was doing.
Right.
And, you know, we just have Google Image Search.
You have like, but even, fee of reference books that I never look in.
Right.
Because it's so much easier.
And now we can even just Google, like, we can look at how somebody did it. I mean, I'm working on a recreation of a painter who did something in you know, back in World War II. But I can stare at that piece and kind of figure backwards design, like how he did the watercolor textures and figure that out. And we can look at other artists and study from them instantly as we think about it. So I think that's the biggest change.
Yeah. But isn't there a chance of overwhelm in that as well? Because there's so much stuff out there that you can just lose yourself in looking for reference days and weeks.
Yes. I think that's what I'm trying to work on with making the new design of makingcomics.com, because what we're attempting to do...
So you're going to also be curating the content and saying...
Yeah. Like, so basically, we will have these big lists of links on the front page under three different categories, which is making, distribution, and everything else. And the idea of, like, that delineation was, like, we wanted to have one list of categories that dealt with all of the links under, say, brainstorming or drawing, but all had to do with the making process of comics.
Right.
And then distribution's dealing with all of the economics, like how do you sell a comic, how do you submit it to a publisher. And then the third one's all the theoretical stuff, like social psychology and, like, you know, the stuff that you don't need to know, but it's cool to know, like, about the comic making process. So that's in the more category.
Right.
And then under those are all these links of, like, brainstorming, penciling, inking, layout, sales, hiring and firing people, setting up business license, hiring lawyers, all those kind of things.
Right.
But then they go to a subpage on the site. And under that subpage are links that users can submit to us.
Right.
But they're not saying, like, Pally Schmidt's, like, top 10, Pally Schmidt is awesome, and he did this link, because that's not useful, because we also assume that everybody coming to makingcomics.com has never made a comic before.
Right.
So it's actually going to say 10 links to do this specific thing.
Right.
And then it'll send you to that site.
Right.
But our site will curate the content, so it explains to you what you can get out of that link to help you with your process. And they're edited and submitted by users. So we're hoping to map out everything online. Yeah. But like you said about getting overwhelmed, that's our answer to that question. Like, we're trying to help underwhelm. Yeah.
No, hopefully not.
We're hoping to underwhelm all of the people in the world. Well, and I think the, you know, Internet 1.0, Web 1.0 was about getting everybody online. Like, the 90s was all about getting access to the machines.
Right.
The 2000s were all about connecting everybody, but in this haphazard way. Like, everybody's connected. And I think now I think the next version of the Internet is going to be about organizing it so it's useful to you as an individual, because no one's done that. Like, I mean, Wikipedia is the closest, but it's about everything. Yeah. Facebook is about connecting to everybody. And so when we're talking about, like, you need a guide, you need people to be like, I'll hold your hand and walk you through this process.
Right. Yeah, because also Google, I mean, you can cheat Google with all sorts of weird black hat SEO tricks and whatnot. And we're all struggling to get on that first page of Google. Right. But nothing is, it's not fail-safe.
Right.
The stuff that's on the first page of Google isn't necessarily the most relevant stuff for you. So.
Right. And that's a problem. We don't have guides. I mean, even your website, Comics for Beginners, could basically be called Pally Schmidt is going to hold your hand and help you make comics. Yeah. Like that's what your website is. And I think makingcomics.com, we're not seeking to be as one voiced as like Scott McCloud or what you're doing.
Right.
What I think we're trying to do is just create a tool that will help organize all of it. And then we'll go down into maybe doing classes and stuff like that. And we have a community and
You've done classes in the before the MOOC.
What are you? Yeah, the Massive Open Online Course. We did it last spring. The Get a Grasp MOOC. It was a primer course. And right now you can even go on and do the whole thing for free. It's still up. So
Yeah. And also just the blog posts and the articles you post are really helpful. So
Yeah. That's, and we're going to steer a little bit away from blog posts. I think with a new version of the website, we'll have our regular stuff, like the Gutter Talk, the podcast will still come out on Fridays. Kevin Cullen does this Talking Comics where he interviews people through writing, and then the Underdogs publish like their spotlight artists, and they do like gift exchanges and stuff like that with their worldwide community. But I think we're going to be really focusing on making this new tool work.
When do you think that's going to be up and running?
We're hoping by January, so exactly a year from when we started the first time.
Wow.
It'll change the interface. It's meant to be something that could exist on your drafting table while you're creating comics as a tool to help you. You're like, oh, I need to know how to draw this one thing. So you go to the drawing section and there's like, it has this hand, draw it. There's like 15 hand drawing things and I can find the best one. And, you know, eventually we have dreams of creating a ranking system, or a review system so that people can say this one's good and this one's okay. And, but we want it all to be crowdsourced. So we want everybody to be working on it together. And
So apart from makingcomics.com, where can people find you online?
I have a, my portfolio is theheadcomic.com. I have a Twitter at Patrick Urich. I'm working on a couple comic books, namely Hipster Picnic is out right now.
Right.
And that's on storyforgeproductions.com. And that's a zombie buddy comedy. comicproductions.com. And that one's that's a zombie buddy comedy, like, comic. And that's cool. I mean, I'm excited for that because, you know, a year from now, I'm hoping to do a big Kickstarter campaign and, like, publish that.
So, right.
I've been working on it, like, since 2010, off and on, so.
Do you have a mailing list people can sign up for?
Not for me personally, but for Making Comics we do. Right. So, yeah, there's a newsletter on makingcomics.com. And I definitely urge everybody to go check that stuff out because I think that's the landing page for all of our... I should have a mailing list. I feel like you'd be lecturing me for not having a mailing list after our conversation earlier.
I won't go there. It's cool. You've been lecturing me as well. It's we've learned from each other, which is great.
Right,
so
right.
thanks for chatting with me.
Yeah. Thank you, Bella.
Thank you.
Listening to the Comics for Beginners podcast. For tutorial videos and more hands-on tips on how to write and draw comics, go to comicsforbeginners.com.